You're listening to a Conversations on Character special, brought to you by the Jubilee Centre for Character and Virtues in collaboration with the Sport Legacy Foundation. Your host is Professor Tom Harrison, and this week he interviews Heather Knight, OBE, English World Cup winning cricket captain and one of Wisden's Cricketers of the Year for 2017.
I'm absolutely delighted that today's guest is Heather Knight, OBE, on the Conversations on Character Commonwealth Games podcast special. Heather will be well known to many of our listeners as a World Cup winning English cricket captain and all-rounder, one of Wisden's Cricketers of the Year in 2017, and also an ambassador for the Chance to Shine programme. In this conversation, we really get to grips with the links between character and sport, and in particular, the particular responsibility of captains to be exemplars of different sorts of character qualities. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation with Heather Knight, OBE. Heather, as someone who's been a huge fan of cricket all my life, I'm so delighted to get this opportunity to speak to you today as part of this Conversation on Character podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be here. Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much indeed for giving your time. And what we really want to do is just talk about, in particular, the importance of kind of character development or the development of qualities that young people can really develop through sport. But I want to take you to kind of that crease, and when you're, you know, kind of facing fast bowlers, spin bowlers and all the rest of it, what do you think of the character qualities or strengths that you most draw on in those situations? Clearly, you've got bundles of natural talent, but sometimes natural talent isn't enough in those situations, I'd guess.
I guess I've always prided myself on being able to adapt to any situation, really. I've batted in the middle order for England and the other teams that I play for domestically. And in that role, you have to be quite nimble and adapt to what's in front of you. And I guess growing up, I always enjoyed the tactical side of cricket, working out how to craft an innings to win a game. Obviously, the captaincy side of stuff, trying to work out how to get the best out of your bowlers and how to manage games ultimately to win. And it's probably a characteristic I developed when I was younger. Like, I loved solving maths problems. I loved playing card games. I loved the tactical side of things. And I guess that was something I developed. And I found cricket, which kind of allowed me to do that stuff as well. I think it's taught me so many things, how I go about things at the crease. Resilience as a batter, you often have days where you fail. They say it's a game of failure. If you don't score 100 every match, It's not a success. So you have to find ways to deal with that, to stay quite level. As a captain as well, I pride myself on staying quite level. Hopefully people don't know whether I'm playing amazingly or playing badly, because I want to be quite consistent in how I am around the team, how I go about things, and try and bring that sense of calmness by how I do things.
Do you feel that your kind of character to some extent has changed since you took over the captaincy role? Because it's all one thing when you're an individual, you know, just starting out in your career and, you know, focusing on resilience and determination to score the big runs. But that changes when you're kind of the exemplar in many ways to others around you.
Yeah, massively. I think when I was first starting out in my career, I was very determined to do well, very hardworking, focused on my game. And I think when I got made vice captain, I had to start to think about how I was going to help other people and starting to grow my empathetic side, grow how you put yourself in other players' shoes and how you communicate and relate to them. And that's something 100% that I've developed a lot more. You have to be a lot less selfish, I think, when you're captain. When you're a player, you're just obviously desperate to do well. And I think I felt like growing up, I grew up down in Devon. I was always sort of out of the mix, and I had to really fight hard to be noticed and fight hard to get in the England team. And I think that sort of self-focus and determination I kind of had to keep, but also put to the side a little bit to try and grow my captaincy. And I still feel like I'm learning now. Like, I've been in the job for 6 years now, and I still feel like I'm trying to develop. And the hardest thing I think about captaincy, sometimes you don't get a huge amount of feedback. You obviously get feedback in terms of results and things, but you have to have a process where you dissect decisions purely not based on outcome, because if you do it always on outcome, it's never 100% guarantee of reviewing a good decision or a bad decision, I think. And like how you are with players, you don't always get feedback on that. So I think you're always trying to learn, trying to be approachable as well. So if you've probably not done something that's gone down that well, if you're approachable, people will tell you, which if you're not, they don't, and that can become a bit of an issue.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a huge pressure to some extent, being that role model position as well as the job that you've actually got to do on the field. Were there any particular kind of role models when you grew up, or you know, particular coaches or supporters you really felt helped to bring the best out of you? Not just in terms of your technical skill, which, as I say, is clearly there, but you know, the person you are when you play the game, and indeed, captain.
Oh, definitely my parents. My mum played loads of sports. She played squash against men all the time, and I used to watch as a kid, and it made it really normal for me to be a woman in sport and have that female role model that was competitive and wanted to compete against boys, I guess, because I played a lot of boys and men's cricket growing up. And my dad as well, who drove me around to various cricket grounds in the southwest and beyond when I was growing up. And he has a sort of leadership management background, so chatting through things with him, chatting through cricket, was always very useful. And I guess in terms of outside of that, there wasn't a huge amount of female women's sports role models that I watched, maybe bar the likes of Kelly Holmes, Denise Lewis, ring a bell, the way they always enjoyed their sport. Denise Lewis in particular always looked like she was having a blast, and I definitely took those characteristics into sport and tried to enjoy everything I did. And I didn't know anything about the women's cricket team, so I took my role models from the men's game. And I love watching Marcus Trescothick bat. He kept things very simple. He's an opening batter like I was growing up, from the West Country as well. So, yeah, I just enjoyed watching him play, the freedom that he had, and how he took attacks on, which I always loved to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you mentioned Kelly Holmes there, because we've been involved a bit in our centre with Kelly Holmes. She set up the foundation around character, because she really noticed that element of, you know, in terms of personal well-being and all the others, there's a lot to do with the people around you, but also the qualities that they help you develop. I mean, in a way, is there too much pressure on sports people to be considered role models? Because we're all human at the end of the day, who do good things and not so good things, and succeed and don't succeed in different sorts of areas. But sometimes sports stars are presented as these, you know, kind of heroes of that everyone needs to kind of look up to. But that feels like it must be a very pressured situation to be in terms of expectation.
Yeah, sometimes I think I will see it as part of the job, particularly as my role as captain. It's to role model the sport and show the best side of it, I think. And I think that role modelling comes in different ways. I think you look at Ben Stokes and how open he's been recently, which is actually role modelling vulnerability. And often as a leader, you're expected to be inflappable, you're expected to be strong, and you're expected to fit a certain character type and stereotype of what a leader should be, really. So I think I've certainly taken things from that. I definitely find it quite hard to be vulnerable and particularly as captain, to talk about things that I've found hard. And I've certainly, over the last couple of years in particular, seen the value in that, and seen the value of showing vulnerability to teammates and how it builds trust. And particularly with COVID, where it's been really tricky time living in bubbles and under various restrictions, it's been a tricky time to captain as well. And I've definitely found being a lot more open and vulnerable has a real positive effect on people around you. So I think it's role modelling different things. I don't think it's a pressure. I think it should be like seen as a privilege and part of the job, really. Like you're in the public eye because you've excelled at your sport, and a lot of people look up to you, particularly kids. And one thing I've loved the last maybe 4 years is the amount of young girls that have started to see flocking in to watch the game, and how the game's starting to become a lot more inclusive. I think I've seen it at the 100 and our internationals, particularly this summer, the amount of girls that just love coming to watch and know all the players and look up to all the players and see their role models in women's sport rather than me growing up and only knowing male cricketers. So yeah, I see it as a really powerful thing and a privilege that I have to try and be there for those young girls to look up to and hopefully inspire to get involved in cricket.
The vulnerability element, I think, is so difficult sometimes when you are a leader. And as you say, people like Ben Stokes, I watched his documentary and I thought it was fantastic. Marcus Trostothic was obviously very open about his struggles in the past as well. But and it takes courage, doesn't it, I think, to be able to open up like that. But there does seem to be a move to be much more accepting and understanding that we are, as you say, we are human and vulnerability matters. And as you say, you can build trust through those sort of elements. But I think that will be a positive message. My daughter loves sport. And it's great that she loves sport because so many of her friends, she's just in secondary school, have, you know, particularly her female girlfriends, have just like stopped doing sport entirely. And I think sometimes they just don't feel that they fit with some of the expectations around it. But I know you've been a very keen advocate for kind of youth sport in general, but also kind of girls taking up sport is through things such as the Chance to Shine and other programs you've been involved with. Is it what motivates you to get involved with things like Chance to Shine?
Oh, well, originally it was because I needed a job. I just came out of uni and cricket wasn't professional back then, and Chance to Shine had a partnership with the England women's team. But yeah, it was something I loved doing. I did a bit of work for the Youth Sports Trust as well, going into schools and working with really different groups, working with gifted and talented groups, or going to pupil referral units and working with kids like that. And I think that taught me a lot, actually, and gave me a lot of perspective, obviously going more down the professional cricket route later in my career. And I think it's so important. Like, sport has taught me so many things. Like, it's made me resilient. It's given me the chance to grow as a person. Like, I was a super shy kid, and cricket was my way to communicate with people. It was my way to connect with people and allowed me to grow as a person and develop those relationships, which was so important to the person I am now. I think I owe sport in particular, not just cricket, played a lot of football and squash and any sport I could growing up, really. So I think it's important that kids do that, and I want to, particularly girls, try and get more of them involved, because it's so easy to drop out, I think, and it feels like there's a real momentum around women's sport. I've really noticed perceptions changing, like, because I've been injured, I've done a few more visits to a cricket camp Activate that I work with, and just some of the questions from like 12-year-old boys recently have been like really a sign of perceptions changing, like boys asking, how did you deal with sexism when you were growing up, are you happy with where the women's game is at, how it's grown, and where do you think it should go? And these are like 12-year-old boys, and previously they wouldn't have any sort of inkling about any of this stuff and what female athletes and sports people have to deal with. So I think that's a real sign of perceptions changing, which is really positive to see. And I think I was carrying my cricket bat around at school at sort of age 12, 13, and just was really embarrassed, I think. And I carried on playing because I loved it, and just it was a big part of my life. But I think easily girls could just drop out. So yeah, it's a big passion of mine, definitely, to try and get more girls playing in sport, and particularly obviously in cricket.
Yeah, sounds like some of those children should have been perhaps asking you the hard-hitting questions on this podcast interview today, Heather. But I mean, Child Shine is, as I've already mentioned, but other organisations like the Sports Legacy Foundation, who this podcast in partnership with, as you say, very keen to emphasise youth sport. But as you say, there are barriers, sometimes societal and kind of cultural expectations. Some of this just what happens in kind of schools and community settings as well. I thought the Flintoff documentary recently, trying to go into some kind of areas where children just didn't even know about cricket, said it's never a great impression of it, and how that can change kind of mindsets about the importance of sport at that age is really important. But I mean, how do you see, I think things are definitely changing with 100 and Commonwealth Games, etc., obviously the Lionesses in football, etc., but do you see that progressing? Do you see more of these barriers, I suppose, coming down in terms of women's sport?
Yeah, I think so. I think in cricket, the game's just grown exponentially. Again, it surprises me every year how things develop and grow. And I think early in my career, I think as players, we were just grateful for almost what we were given, like how lucky we get to play for our country, even though we're not paid, and in comparison to being a male in a similar job or role, it's a very different place to be. So I think now, certainly, I've been a lot more vocal about speaking out and saying when I believe things aren't right, and trying to change things from the inside. And I think that needs to happen when people are perceptive to having that challenge. And that's certainly something that's changed. I think 2017, in terms of women's cricket, was a big change in that. And excuse me, I think the biggest thing was people at England Wales Cricket Board, the governing body, seeing the crowd that was at that 2017 final and thinking, oh, actually, women's cricket could be our biggest growth area. This is the sort of audience that we want to bring to cricket. So things like that, changing perceptions, have really helped to break down those barriers, and have helped a lot of sometimes male advocates help to try and push the game forward. I still think there's a long way to go in terms of representation and leadership and things like that. But certainly in cricket, perceptions are definitely changing. Perceptions of men's players have started to change, and started to be a lot more inclusive, I think. So yeah, so it's a really exciting time to be involved in sport. It's pretty remarkable, the journey that's been on, and it feels like all of the sports, women's sports, are in it together a little bit. Like, how good was the Lionesses winning? Got to be at the celebrations for the hockey girls winning gold at the Commonwealth Games, which was a lot of fun, and the netball girls are around as well. So it feels like there's a bit of a women's sport community that's all trying to push women's sport in this country forward, and just changing those perceptions for boys and girls growing up is really important, I think.
Yeah. And you mentioned the Commonwealth Games, and this podcast has been timed as a kind of a special around the Commonwealth Games. We hosted the hockey here actually at the University of Birmingham, and there certainly was a buzz around the city, I think, when that was going on. And I know obviously cricket was included, women's cricket was included the first time. What are your memories from the Commonwealth Games? If I know you've had a lot of cricket in the 100 since then, but thinking back to kind of end of July time.
Yeah, well, it was quite mixed for me really, because I was injured and was fighting to be fit for the Commonwealths, and I actually just got worse and worse and was in quite a lot of pain during that period. Ended up on crutches halfway through the Commonwealths and found out that I wasn't going to be fit for it and need an operation. So there was kind of that side of it, and wanting to help the girls who obviously didn't pick up a medal, which was quite disappointing. But also just getting the chance to experience the Commonwealths was really, really cool. Like being at the opening ceremony just was so unique compared to anything we'd ever done in cricket before. It's always... You're always competing just cricket events, just getting the chance to compete for Team England and be at a multi-sport event and feel part of the buzz around the games was amazing. I was really happy that I was able to be there, despite obviously picking up that injury and not being able to play. And just the support that we got was remarkable, and a very different crowd actually for cricket. Like usually when you have a big crowd at cricket, there's always sort of a background hum of noise. Yeah. But it was really strange at Edgbaston, and we had like 20,000 people, and they go deadly silent for every ball. So like it was a bit, they're waiting to see what happened. Then they were just so supportive, like clapping things that weren't even particularly good, like a half fielding stop, which usually wouldn't be that good. They were just going mad for it. So that was really cool, just to be able to play in front of people that probably haven't seen too much cricket before, and just experience the brilliant crowds that have carried on again into the 100, which is awesome. So yeah, I definitely count it as a mixed experience, but I really enjoyed just being part of Team England and getting to hang out and go and watch obviously some of the events as well.
Well, of course, we really hope you're back on the pitch extremely, extremely soon. It's always this legacy question for anything like Commonwealth Games. It's a challenging question, because you're obviously trying to look into the future of kind of sustaining that momentum early on. I mean, is there stuff that you think's kind of happening in the future or soon that you think will really push on, not just the momentum built from the Commonwealth Games, but in kind of women's cricket more broadly as well?
Yeah, well, I think we're just playing so much more cricket now. I was looking back to the English summer where I made my debut in 2010, and we played six games. We played three T20s and three one-dayers against New Zealand, and that was the international summer done. And this summer we've had seven games against South Africa at the Commonwealth Games, but the 100, which feels like internationals because of the crowd and the fact every game's on telly and the pressure that comes with that. And then the girls are going into a series against India. So it's pretty much non-stop, and that's great. It's bringing different challenges for us, but playing the volume of cricket is so good. And I think it's a real interesting time for women's cricket around the world, actually, because it's starting to go like the men's game, and there's starting to be huge opportunities to play in leagues overseas. There's talk about trying to get cricket in the Olympics as well. If that does happen, I'll probably have hung up my boots by then, because it obviously takes a long time to go through all the processes to get it into the Olympics. But the Commonwealth Games was a huge, huge positive, I think, for the sport, just having women's cricket on that stage and the ability to reach people that maybe wouldn't have watched the sport before.
I've got a couple more questions. One, just coming back to this topic around kind of character development and sport and all your how your character is shown through sport. I mean, when young people come to watch you play sport, you know, this is probably a bit of a tough question, but what do you hope that they will take from that experience apart from a good day out?
Well, yeah, I'd love them to see us as a team, as a team that really enjoys their cricket, a team that is successful, hopefully, plays with a lot of passion and fight, but has a lot of fun. Like, we're really good mates in the team. And I think that's a really important thing to get young girls interested in sport, to have a group of friends and that sort of togetherness that you get from being part of a sports team. Like, I don't think I could play an individual sport. I'd just be, I don't know, I think I'd find it hard to do it on my own. And I love the team element of things and sharing like special moments and even sharing like horrible moments with teammates is, I think, something that bonds you with them for a lifetime, really. So yeah, I think that sense of togetherness is always something I want in teams that I captain and teams that I'm involved in. And yeah, hopefully we have fun. Hopefully we play it pretty hard and hopefully we entertain people with how we play our cricket.
And then, and we always conclude these podcasts, Heather, by something called Virtue from a Hat, where basically I'm going to pull out a quality from this hat in front of me and really just like you to think of someone that you think really exemplifies that. It could be someone really well known, or it could be someone kind of personal to you. So hopefully you're up for this final thing.
Oh, God, you put me on the spot then.
I know. Well, that's the point of it. So we'll give it a go. So I'm going in now. The quality I've got is resilience. Is there anyone that springs to mind that you think has really demonstrated resilience through their life?
Yeah, I think one player that I've played with for a long time springs to mind, Catherine Brunt. Yeah. She's someone that's gone through quite a lot of things in her life and her career. She's had two back operations. I saw her in a wheelchair, actually. What year was it? It was in 2018 World Cup in the West Indies. She left to go home in a wheelchair, and she was, how old at that stage, probably about 33, and I was like, that's her done, her career's over. And she's still playing now at 37. She's still going in with the same passion and same fire that she had. And yeah, she's certainly someone that's very resilient, and that I've really enjoyed captaining, actually. She's hard work at times for sure, but she's also very passionate and very entertaining to watch and to captain.
Yeah, and she's definitely got that. I mean, I think Jimmy Anderson are fighting, aren't they, to see who can sustain their career for longest between them right now. But she's definitely been huge inspiration. In fact, I was listening to an interview with Izzy Wong just the other day, just talking about Catherine Brunson and the effect that Catherine's had on her. So that's fantastic. But Heather, thank you so much indeed for joining us for this podcast. It's been fantastic to have this discussion with you.
That was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Conversations on Character Commonwealth Games special, hosted by Professor Tom Harrison and produced by me, Joe Madell, on behalf of the Jubilee Centre and the Sport Legacy Foundation. To hear all previous episodes and to learn more about this collaboration, visit jubileecentre.ac.uk/commonwealthpodcast or sportforlifeinternational.org. That's all for now. We'll see you next time.